Okay, so from now on, here's what I think I'm going to do. I'm going to say, like, what up, Holt Heads, or how you doing, Holt Heads, or whatever. I'm going to have some sort of line that says, hello, I'm Kurt Money, and this is my co-host. And you'd say, Caitlin, or something. You can say whatever you want. But this is going to be a quick throw to you that I do before I do all the description bullshit. You know what I mean? Okay, all right. What up, Holt Heads? Kurt Money here, alongside my co-host.
You already know, it's your girl, Caitlin.
That's perfect, okay? I want you to say that every week.
I'm Lester Holt.
KMDB is still down. I don't know what the story is. Season 32, episode 17. When 17-year-old Alyssa Turney is reported missing in Phoenix, it takes years before detectives treat her case as a homicide. A new investigation unearths dark family secrets. Hosted by AC.
Here's Andrea Canning with The Day Alyssa Disappeared.
Now, Kay, let's hear your thoughts on this episode.
This episode is crazy. It's crazy.
Yeah.
I did not see any of these twists coming. We're following one person on their journey to get justice.
The court issued that subpoena, and Alyssa's dad got the phone records.
And all of a sudden, that's the person who might have done it.
Do you understand the phrase, turning the family?
And I was like, what?
I'm sorry, what?
This was nuts.
Yeah, it was f***ing crazy. I'm glad that you said a thing you just did. I came here tonight and hit record knowing that I'm gonna eat shit here a little bit. Cause I am not proud of myself with how long I was still on that motherfucker side at the beginning of this episode.
Kurt, like, I hear you. I was the same way. And that's
really
just because of the way Dateline framed it.
Well, excellent framing. I mean, look, Dateline, they had me hook, line, and sinker on this ep. I fell for everything. I was like following the scent in a cartoon. Like, Dateline's like, you think it's over here?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm still doing that because the way it ended,
yeah.
I think usually I might disagree, but I'm like,
yeah.
No, I feel exactly the way AC feels.
Which is what? Well, wait. Boy, because is it a spoiler for me to ask you if you think that he did it or not? And it doesn't spoil the end by any means.
I do think he did it, but I also agree that the prosecution didn't really do a good job of proving it. So the acquittal
no
makes sense.
But is that technically called the acquittal? So now that we've done that, let's kick that down the road when we talk trial. Because I don't even know if that's technically called the acquittal.
It is. They said it was.
Oh, okay.
An acquittal for Mike Turney.
Story begins in 2001 in Phoenix. Okay, how many times have you been to Phoenix in Dateline in season 32? This is at least number 3.
Listen, the desert is a crazy place.
Yeah, you know, it is. That is probably what it has to do with, right? Desert, man. I wonder if AC swung by the old canals to see where Keith was. And she did like a little Keith impression.
Leaning.
Yeah. Who reports her missing?
Her stepdad.
So her stepdad reports her missing because he hasn't seen her in like a day and a half or so.
Something like that. He actually did pick her up from school.
Early.
Alyssa left school early that day. Mike says they had important things to talk about.
So she goes missing and her dad, Mike Turney.
Stepdad. Her mom and her real dad had a brutal custody battle. And it sounded like her mom took her and the rest of the kids and just kept them from their dad and raised them with Mike, who then adopted them. They had his last name.
That mom died from cancer pretty early on, right? They were young when she died.
Yes.
So much so that it was kind of like single dad. Like the kids, all these...
He ruled with an iron fist.
And everything that my father said was the word, the true word.
The dad goes and tries to get the sheriff's department to look for his daughter. And he throws out a great word here. Well, not a great word, but he says, an endangered runaway. Like, he even goes in there and admits he's the thing that you're not supposed to say because they'll never look for her. And so at this point, upon first watch, I'm going like, no, dude, don't say that. Don't say that because now they won't look for her.
I was trying to convince them that Alyssa was an endangered runaway. I'm worried about my child. We hear that all the time, Mr. Turney.
Ah, but what does son of Mike Turney tell us over and over? Crazy, not stupid. And I think that's a great point right then and there. So the beginning of this is all about Mike Turney trying to get the cops to help him look for his missing teen runaway.
And when you hear him tell it, he's doing everything he can to get the word out. So there's like flyers and all of that.
Back home, Mike pushed to get Alyssa's case noticed.
But something extra fun.
Eh?
Right, Kurt?
That's right. So he's trying to get the word out about his missing daughter. And one of the ways that he does it is he puts Alyssa's picture on the hood of a car in a NASCAR event.
He was able to get Alyssa featured at a NASCAR event. Her face appeared on the hood of a race car.
Now, that is interesting because I love NASCAR. I'm a video editor for Fox and NASCAR, and it's super dope. But what thrilled me about this was the idea of like, God, I can't wait to find out what race it was where I get to watch whoever zipping around. Like who won this race? What year was it? I couldn't wait. And then deflated instantly. If you'll notice on the episode, there's like rando stock footage. So I thought that meant one of two things. Production crew was lazy and didn't go looking. So I thought maybe I'll be able to find this. Or two, it was so low rent a long time ago that there's no pic of it. That turns out to be the truth.
That makes a lot of sense. So it was an event, not a race.
The series was technically a NASCAR event, but it only ran for 20 years and it ended 2 or 3 years after this. But the point is that Mike Turney is doing these things that on the surface look like he's doing a whole hell of a lot. Especially, you know, as AC tells it, we're thinking he's getting like a big audience of NASCAR, but it's not. It's like a local to California. Oh, so I did. Oh, okay. All I found was one article that talked about it, and it's talking about the dad and how all he does is look for his missing daughter. And they quote the dad saying that he's been all over California. Does that ring any bells? That's what he's been telling everybody.
Wow. He was even pushing that alibi to the NASCAR crew.
Yeah.
He was driving out to places to canvass the area, driving to California.
This just supports the theory, crazy, not stupid. Like, these were all planted seeds to distract the police. And one could say it did for 20 years.
And us, because at this point in the episode, AC is interviewing him, and we're like, man, this guy really was doing everything he could.
I went ahead and took pictures of the phone just to keep my memory straight. And then I started going to the various police departments.
And then it takes a wild turn, and his talking heads stop, and we realize, wait a minute, he's actually the main suspect. And it threw me because he, in his talking heads, he's not wearing a prison uniform. So I'm like, okay.
No.
Because typically if they're going to interview someone who was a suspect or who was arrested for it, you can kind of tell that it's prison. They'll be in like a weird, if it's not a jumpsuit.
But he's in white.
He's in white.
That's the thing though. What he's wearing, I've seen as a talking head for a prisoner on a true crime show. That's the thing. They sometimes are wearing a white button-up with zero branding, though.
So it goes from, like, this man is still looking for his daughter to, wait a minute, was he arrested for this? Is he in prison?
Yeah. Did you make it all the way until when they found the pipe bombs? I was on this guy's side until I saw the manifesto, Kate.
Yeah.
I even heard pipe bombs, and I thought, now I'm going to hear this out. Maybe it wasn't him. And then they found like a book he wrote about his daughters. And I'm like, ah!
Michael Turney had created in stamped sealed envelopes for NBC, for ABC, for local media. It's being described as a manifesto.
It was titled Diary of a Madman Lost in an Obsession for Justice and Closure.
Well, I think I was kind of tipped off when the talking heads with him stopped and then it switched to the detective's point of view of like, yeah, Mike was saying he was doing all this stuff to look for her, but actually he refused to talk to us.
I start getting objections.
He would not come into the office. He wouldn't share evidence.
Yeah, but you wouldn't either. You would not go in either, Kate. So again, I'm still,
yes,
even though Mike has disappeared, I'm still on his side at this point.
But he wouldn't share evidence. He said he had all this videotape of the house, all this surveillance. And they're like, great, can we see it? And he's like, yeah, I'll get it to you. And he never does.
Yeah.
And we,
but he keeps talking about it.
He keeps talking about it. And then they dig a little deeper. And this isn't just your average surveillance. This is like really, really creepy surveillance of his own daughter.
Oh, and anybody who's in his house.
Sure.
So they got like, supposedly they got robbed. And at one point he goes, yes, Now I have permission to put a camera outside the front door and on the inside of the living room, inside the vent. And they say that back then people didn't have security cams.
Security cameras were rare in 2001.
And that's true, but are you hiding it from the people who live there? Like, it's weird that it's in the f***ing vent.
Right, because they all knew it was there because there's a red dot blinking and you could see it in the vent.
Yeah.
So why is it hidden?
I don't know.
And was that never a conversation where it was like, Dad, we know there's a camera in there? Or did they just pretend like they didn't know?
Yeah.
Oh, you could see it?
Yeah.
Like a red light?
Yeah.
Like it was
a little
on?
A bleeping red light.
Well, I think it was that, but it was also, I mean, like they said, they knew that he recorded phone calls. They played that phone call with the aunt, that aunt who was, God, could have been a real all-star.
Yeah, clearly Alyssa reached out to her aunt several times about living under Mike's roof.
Alyssa talked to her aunt in California just weeks before she disappeared, and Mike knew it.
So wasn't that also one of the things that Mike told the cops Alyssa could have tried to do? She may have tried to go to California to find her aunt.
Yes, and so what's crazy is we hear the actual phone call between Alyssa and the aunt. And that also happens to be the one where the dad interrupts and is like, hello, are you still on the phone?
Yes. No. My dad. You know what? Alyssa?
Yeah.
If you ever want to come out with me, I'm right here.
Okay.
Uh-huh.
They knew about the phone recording. I don't know if they knew about the video, because then she wouldn't have made out with that boyfriend, which is so disgusting that we've seen that. This poor girl cheated on her boyfriend. They're in high school or whatever, right? And this f***ing asshole dad not only told the boyfriend that his daughter was cheating on him, but then also recorded her making out with this other guy.
Yes.
And we see that footage.
And you know he's lying because he tells the boyfriend, you know, she's cheating on you, knowing full well that he recorded it and it was like intentional. And then he tells AC, he's like, yeah, that was a very unfortunate thing that the camera caught footage of her making out. And it's like, why else would you have recorded it?
Yeah.
Don't try to act like you didn't mean to catch weird stuff like that.
And it was unfortunate I caught the makeout on the tape.
Yeah. Now, I was looking at this guy. So for one, I grew up, my dad did a lot of taping too. Like, we took a lot of pictures, did a lot of recording. And actually, I mean, there's nothing wrong if you have a kid and they know it. They're recording them at work or whatever. I've been recorded, like, that's allowed to happen once. You're allowed to record your kid or sibling or whatever once, and that's
it. Well, that's what AC said, too.
She didn't really say once, though. I needed to hear it, though.
And then the footage they show of her at work is her being like, oh, my God, he's out there again. Stop recording me.
Yeah, you see that moment. It registers that, yes, that's my dad. You see it on the video.
That's Alyssa at work. She seems annoyed. Her father is outside with his camera.
Oh, that's brutal. Now, look, when my sister started working at Subway, I walked in there with my phone recording her. Now, I think it's a little different when people got phones and you're doing vids, because then everything is being recorded, right?
Yeah, but he's out there with a big camcorder on his shoulder.
It's like she's being stalked, almost.
I think at a certain point, when we got to doing a lot of video with our phone, that's not as sad, but it would still be sad no matter what for him to do it just more than once. And this guy did it, by his account, every single day.
It's insane. It's so creepy. He's obsessed with her.
Yeah!
Mr. Turney has stated that he would routinely show up an hour or two early to ensure that she did not leave the premise with anybody else.
Oh my God.
It's gross.
And then this is where it takes another turn. Her real dad actually comes out the woodwork and tells the police that Mike probably had something to do with her disappearance.
This guy, this dad that Mike had to step up for, to quote you and your stepfather platitude.
Mm-hmm. What did you think had happened?
I think he did something to her. I just felt it as a father. I could feel there was something not right there.
This dad that he signed over the rights to was so weird. This guy had to come back and be like, all right, fine, I'll be in her life again. This guy's psycho.
Yeah.
He was just narcissistic. That's what he was. It's all about Michael and no one else in the world.
He goes to California to try to figure out where this guy was calling from. They find the payphone and he takes a picture of the payphone, he says, for like his own evidence. as if that proves anything.
You think he drove all the way to California and made the call from the payphone and then drove home?
He himself says he made several trips to California. He easily could have made that call.
The one day of video footage he doesn't have is the one day that Alyssa left. His reasoning in AC, this is an all-timer for AC. This is an AC all-timer, which is what I called it on the IG. I'll admit I was a little, maybe overstoked in the moment, thinking this was a super ep. There were a lot of twists and turns and stuff. But anyway, this was absolutely an all-star performance by AC drilling this yacht.
She was not having any of his...
That you were not trying to find her because you knew that she was dead. Because you had killed her.
And about this missing call, she had to make him say, he's like, yeah, I heard that one before. Right? Like, she's like, no, but this doesn't make any sense.
It flipped off, and I hadn't started it that morning yet.
So 30 years of calls, and then you miss recording this call.
Yeah, I've heard that one.
The faces that she made. I'm getting back in the gift game to put on our socials because she was making some great reactions and stuff.
And she was drilling him about why he recorded everything, why he recorded phone calls and filmed everybody. And we learned that it's because Mike was convinced that he was a target because he had beef with the electrical union.
Ugh.
And thought that they were trying to kill him.
And that they tried to kill him by knocking him off of a ladder, and it gets even worse than that.
And he was convinced that union members kidnapped Alyssa and took her to a random town in California.
Yeah.
She was abducted by union members that somehow recognized her, killed her, and left her body in Desert Center, California.
And it's like, okay, Mike, sweetie, nobody is thinking about you. This isn't about that. So he did what anyone would do and stockpiled weapons, wrote a manifesto, and planned to massacre the entire electrical union at their Christmas party.
He'd even marked his calendar with a big X.
That happened to be the next date for the local union's Christmas party. That's when they would have all their members, wives, children at the party.
Yeah. Now, how did they know that X on the calendar was that party? I mean, everything else makes absolute sense, and I agree. And this is when I turned on him, and I said, lock him up. I'm not impressed by it that he's a hard worker or that he's a whistleblower.
Maybe his manifesto said, I'm going to go in there and shoot up the Christmas party.
Well, I tried to find that manifesto. Stay tuned on that, because it's about two girls, Alyssa and Sarah. It's not just about this other political thing.
He wrote in the manifesto's cover letter, I got to this point in my life that my death, vengeance, and mass murder was all I had left.
And speaking of Sarah,
yes,
all of the interrogation footage we have of her talking to the police, she is still on Mike's side, and she just seems like very separated from it. Like, she was never told all the information, so she was like, yeah, Alyssa was kind of a wild child, and she did a lot of stupid things that put her in danger, and Dad was really protective of her because she could get in trouble, and she was basically just saying all the things that Mike used to say about her. And it wasn't until we heard from Alyssa's friends,
yeah,
that they were like, none of that's true. Alyssa was like a really good kid. She was super nice. She was not promiscuous. She didn't need to have tabs on her at all times. But even Sarah,
yeah,
was like, being really young at the time, was like, well, Dad says she's a bad girl, so I guess she's a bad girl.
I've heard stories of like, hey, you know, get into our car, let's go to a party. And she'll be like, all right, let's go. And her friends will be like, no, Alyssa, we don't know these
like
guys.
Strangers rolling up to
her.
Yeah, and I think that's what happens later at the trial when like, well, you told them this. And it's like, yeah, because I was brainwashed by my psychopath dad.
Right.
The coercive controlness of it all. Like, yeah, I did say that before. Because I lived with this dude. Like, he was pulling the strings. I cut those strings. Now look at me.
So what about when the cops also interviewed Alyssa's cousin, and he says that he saw a recording of Alyssa laying topless on the sofa?
So if you had to put a percentage of how sure you were, it was her.
I would say a good 90% sure.
And my question is, if Alyssa knew the camera was there, why would she lay topless on the sofa? Either she did it on purpose, or Mike made her do it.
Or she didn't know she's being recorded or topless because the newspaper was over her face. I think she's either passed out or she's doing it Because Mike is telling her to, right?
Very creepy. And then we hear from Alyssa's third grade teacher, who says that when she was in third grade, she told her that she had sex with her stepdad and then recanted it.
I'm sorry, what?
And Mike tried to say that she was just confused and, you know, as a little kid, she thought sex meant kissing and I gave her a kiss on the cheek. But AC was like, no, I have a third grader and she knows what sex is. That's not true.
Right. And I agreed. And I listen, anytime that AC talks about her kids, I loved it.
I have a third grader myself and she knows what kissing is.
Yes. Yeah.
But I got an issue with this third grade teacher, no? I mean, that's Alyssa when she's in third grade and she disappears when she's 17. So that means the teacher didn't do dick. And she goes, because if she had said it a second time, I would have contacted CPS. Oh, really? It was that second time that would have done it?
Are you truly telling me this? Because if she told me, I would have called CPS or whatever.
So what's this recording from? When was this recording?
Was it a phone call between her and the police?
So that's like a 911 call? That there's the young auntie?
No, I think they said that she called in when Alyssa was missing and told them this.
She didn't send it in until after Alyssa went missing, though.
Right. She called them with a tip after Alyssa went missing and said, this happened when she was in third grade.
Okay. And now that's good that we have confirmation that we can go back to my cue of, hey, lady, why didn't you do anything day of? Huh?
Yeah, it does seem weird that she clearly asked Mike about it before contacting, like, her administration to go right to the dad and be like, she said she had sex with you. What is the dad gonna say? Yeah, you're right, I did.
That's what's crazy is that what seemed to be her end was that she was like, well, I asked the parents about it.
Michael said, no, 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 she's confused. She thinks sex is when people kiss each other goodnight.
Well, the parent you asked was the one that is being accused, so naturally he's gonna lie. You might see through that, teach. You might look through that just one little bit.
Mm-hmm.
She bought that. And she said, oh, dad said that he didn't fuck his third grader. Got it. Okay, back to school.
It is a little suspicious. But that wasn't the only thing that we heard about. We also heard from friends of Alyssa's that she had confided in them that Mike groped her in his truck one afternoon.
Out in the desert somewhere in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah. And that I guess she actually jumped out of the truck at one point to get away from him, but
yeah,
don't know how that really ended, but it sounded like she had had enough and was confiding in a lot of people. So everyone was suspicious of him at this point.
God, yeah, I mean, you hear the tone in that aunt's voice.
You know what, Alyssa?
Yeah.
If you ever want to come out and visit me, I'm right here.
Really saying, hey, please just say the word and I'll help, like, help you, you know, like she's like, oh,
yep.
And I it's so heartbreaking. And then Alyssa's like, uh-huh, okay.
Alyssa knows they're being recorded, so she can't say anything.
Yeah.
Okay.
She's not gonna say like, yes, I can't wait, click.
I wish she had been able to write a letter to her.
So supposedly Alyssa left a note that they found in her bedroom where she said that you were right, I should just leave. Something about dropped off, because dropped is spelled wrong. It says drooped.
Mm-hmm.
And it was never mentioned in the episode. And they were looking for reasons why it was our child's writing. And anybody could have said the misspellings, but nobody mentioned drooped, Kate.
No, I mean, a high school student might spell it wrong. Well, we know it was written by her. It's in her handwriting.
Yeah, because a handwriting expert said so. Yeah. You just get one more expert to say no and pff, done. Like, I believe handwriting experts, but they're not f***ing science. I don't believe it. I believe that Alyssa wrote that letter. I do.
Alyssa most likely did write it, but she wrote it like months earlier, and that it was specifically referencing a different day when she had been dropped off, not droped, dropped off at school. And the day she went missing, she wasn't dropped off. So it was like Sarah remembered, like, this letter was actually written under a completely different situation and was just used conveniently by Mike to pretend like she wrote it on this day.
Yeah. So they compare the note against other examples of Alyssa's writing, and they get that by finding a high school friend of Alyssa's. Do you remember this lady? She had on a shirt that said along your stepfather lines, but it was like, I'm not special, but I'm a limited edition or some shit like that. But it was in shirt form. Did you see
That's
her?
That's exactly the kind of thing you're going to wear if you're being interviewed on Dateline.
Wee-wee! About this high school friend that you lost touch with at sophomore year. Now talk about trying to get an interesting convo going. This was a Herculean effort by OAC. Do you remember what I'm talking about? I mean, here are the facts that we walked away with from this friend who had the shirt on that said, I'm limited edition. Well, she was a rebel in a good way. We talked about boys. Oh, and we listened to music. We listened to music.
She existed and was a person.
I was next to her sometimes also being a person.
Thank you. Very helpful.
All right. I'm glad I flew to Phoenix for this. I mean, she supplied the photos. But again, I find myself going, I kind of need a producer during one of these watchdowns to go, what if I was the person who this episode was about? Do I want to open on the lowest res, like, off-take prom photo ever? It opened on of her going like...
And oh, it, I
do
know.
You know what I'm talking about?
She was making a goofy face. Show the good photo.
That wasn't even like, all right, now let's do one with bunny ears. That was like mid... Her swallowing or like blinking.
She was like turning her head because her dad was probably like, Alyssa. And she's like, what?
Yeah. God, it's so creepy whenever they play the footage of her in her prom dress and stuff. And yeah.
He's calling her name constantly. Alyssa, look at me. Alyssa.
Yeah.
Over here. Alyssa.
And he needs that attention. If she doesn't turn around, he says it again. And it's like, ew. Like even before knowing that he most likely killed her, it's like, ugh, I don't like any of this.
Alyssa. Alyssa.
I did like that. Okay, the detective.
Detective Anderson was done playing games.
This detective I was suspicious of at first, but I came around on this guy for a few reasons. He answered a lot of questions with a simple yes or no. Okay, did you notice that? He was answering a lot of stuff. What's that, AC? You asked me a question? He answered it and they f***ing moved on. Did you notice that?
Which is a huge red flag.
Absolutely.
But was he also the one who referred to two needles in a stack of needles?
Oh, God, I've been dying to talk about this. Who set that up, though?
I don't remember. I just remember hearing that and losing it and then texting you.
Okay, yeah, I mean, that was that was the highlight.
Two needles.
Yeah.
Not a haystack. Two needles in a stack of needles.
But what's wild is that f***ing AC sets it up.
Finding these two tapes that you need is like finding a needle. Two needles.
Two needles in a stack of needles.
She's the one who suggests the two needles altogether. She did the metaphor. Isn't that crazy?
Speaking of AC.
It would already... hang on. Whoa, whoa, whoa. Time out. Why don't you think that's crazy?
I can't tell what you mean by that. Do you mean that that's funny or bad or what?
You don't think that it's... This is something we make fun of cops for doing because they want to sound like... But AC is the one who did the cop metaphor.
Well, I'm not trying to say anything... I'm not trying to say anything bad about your girl.
I know, but you were switching topics, but I still wanted to talk about that, I was saying.
Well, I was still going to be talking about her.
All right, go ahead.
About a 9 on the tension scale, Rube.
I was going to say... AC had some necklaces.
Sure did.
And I was looking them up.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm pretty sure she was wearing the Van Cleef Alhambra necklace or the dupe of it.
Ooh.
From a company called The Lovely. But I'm guessing it's the real Van Cleef because it's AC.
Mm-hmm. Real thing.
And that's going to set you back like $7,000.
No s***.
Mm-hmm.
Which necklace? Like, what, describe it. Was like a...
The clover.
Was it? Oh, the clover? That cost $7,000?
Mm-hmm.
No. Mm-hmm. The little light blue clover?
Yep.
Not worth it, dog. Not worth $7,000. Hell no.
Well,
if you told me you got that from Claire's 20 years ago, I'd have said, great eBay find. Straight up.
I mean, the dupe of it is like $600.
Shut up. Ew. I didn't like that whole getup. I don't like the AC likes the quilted numbers or whatever. Do you know what I'm talking about?
You don't like that?
No. I'm against that as a pattern. It reminds me of baby bags.
I'm just surprised that you're against anything that she would wear.
Well, listen. Yeah, I guess I am. I don't know what to say.
Let us not forget about a contract that Mike wrote up.
Oof, so weird.
It was a contract stating that he is not controlling Alyssa and not molesting her. And he made her sign it. You know, normal dad-daughter stuff.
At the very top. Number one said,
my father, Mike Turney, has never physically or sexually abused me at any time.
In what world would that ever be acknowledged in court? Like, this purpose that he wanted this signed document for. Could you ever see anyone going, you did sign this doc saying that your dad did not molest you? I don't know.
I guess he's free to go.
Yeah. So let's talk about this daughter, Sarah. 10 years ago, Dateline asked, this is a wild thing. After we talk about how all this started, Kate, I'm going to drop a bomb on you. I got a patented Kurt Money bomb.
Great.
All right. But Sarah is following Dateline on Facebook and comments, yes, my sister's missing. And of course, they get a lot of responses. And this is why they say they do Dateline Missing in America. A series I'm not familiar with because I don't like open cases, Caitlin.
Well, I had an issue with this.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. AC said, we posted on Facebook asking if people had any missing loved ones. And they got a huge response. And because of that, the very next day they started this new show. It's like, no, shows take months to do.
Yeah.
You did a promotional thing by asking people. But let's not say that you're heroes because you were so inspired by all these heart-wrenching responses that you just had to launch a new investigative show.
Yeah, I'm with you with roasting them for this because they do say the very next day they knew exactly what they were up to.
This was PR.
Yeah, which is fine because we know that 48 hours would have been like expose about it style. Like, look, they said it. It wasn't egregious, I thought.
I think it was.
Oh, you do? Okay, okay.
The response was so overwhelming. The very next day, Dateline launched an online series to help shine a light on the missing.
So, Dateline reads this comment by this Sarah Turney girl and says, we're looking into it. This becomes a Dateline episode 10 years ago, apparently. Do you remember it? I don't.
I do not.
Did it become an episode?
I don't remember anything about it.
Me neither. Dateline gets this Sarah girl on the map, like blows her story up. All of a sudden, everybody's talking about Alyssa. She's got a million followers. Like today, she's on TikTok.
Yeah.
She starts a podcast because of this Dateline push, obviously. I mean, that's, well, and because her sister's missing.
Yeah, and it goes viral.
But she like blows up and stuff. And they talk about her in this episode. But did you think it was interesting that AC did not talk to her? What was up with that?
Oh, you're right. They show clips of her podcast.
Can we please just get justice for Alyssa now?
They show her interview with the police when Alyssa first went missing, but she doesn't want to be interviewed.
Guess why?
Why?
She said no. She literally turned Dateline down. And according to AC, her reasoning was she's just going to focus on her TikTok and her podcast. How about that?
But getting exposure on Dateline would help her TikTok and her podcasts.
Yeah. I mean, you don't think it's gone to her head that much that this Sarah thinks she's like, Dateline, yo, I'll go on Conan. That's it. Do you think it's that?
Maybe. Or she wants to control what she puts out and she doesn't want AC to catch her in some kind of weird thing when interviewing her, because for a long time she was kind of like going with it, and maybe Mike did weird stuff to her too and she doesn't want to talk about that. So the only thing we know from her is what she tells us on her terms.
Yeah, and because she's directly related to this story, like I don't fault her that, like she could do whatever she wants, right? Like, but I will say they play little clips and stuff. I get why she would do a podcast. She's the kind of person that should do it. I mean, and that's what got this word out.
I do plan to finish Alyssa's season and tell you how we got to this point, because there is still so much to say.
I mean, as a matter of fact, it's this podcast that got the charges against him. A new DA comes in and thanks Sarah in their acceptance speech and saying, we're reopening the case. We're arresting your dad. Boom, because of this podcast.
That's very cool.
To Alyssa's sister.
She gave Sarah a shout out for keeping the case front and center.
Your perseverance and commitment to finding justice for your sister, Alyssa, is a testament to the love of a sister.
Yeah, and that podcast should go, well, thanks, Dateline. Nah, dog. She gets a call from f***ing AC. She says no to AC, Kate.
We wouldn't say no.
Hell no. I also would not say no to Jay Mank, and this is part of the bomb. I did like a secret backdoor bomb. I know this stuff. I listened to the after Dateline where Jay Mank chatted with AC about this.
Oh, okay.
And it had a lot of great info, and I was loose in my mind.
Let's hear it.
It's so weird and awesome to hear AC talk on the podcast in just her AC normal voice. Like, she's not doing her Andrea Candy and Sugary Snacks, right? Like, she's not doing that.
Do you like her regular voice?
Yep, I sure do. I mean, I also like the Dateline voice, but it feels more personal. Like, it is like her and J-Mank are just chatting, and J-Mank crushes it. So I like AC the same, maybe a little bit more after listening to this. J-Mank's, though, his stock has risen, okay? Because he is exactly the cool-ass guy that you want him to be. I'm going to throw in some clips here or there, but he's just like, he gets it. He's asking all the cues, too, because it's not his case, quote-unquote. He is saying fan stuff like, why did they even take it to trial? Stuff like that.
Love it.
It's wild.
Love it. He's the best.
Yeah.
We are talking Dateline. I'm Josh Mankiewicz, and I'm here with
Andrea Canning, your best friend.
Yes.
And colleague.
So great to see you.
Hey, how about that reveal of the defense attorney with one hand?
Yeah, just part of that arm, huh? I mean, go ahead, Kate. Tell me what you thought about that defense attorney. His name is Jamie. Just go ahead and say something about him. He defended Mike Turney, right? So he's probably like a real a-hole or something. Just share your thoughts and what you thought about old Jamie.
Listen, Kurt, a defense attorney, they're just doing their job. They don't necessarily agree with their clients, but every American citizen is entitled to a defense.
You're right. But like Jamie, like he stunk, right? Like he was like a loser. Wasn't he like a lame guy?
Well, he won.
Yeah, okay. I tried to get you to say something bad about it because AC talked about this guy on the pod. Dude's a fucking hero. Wait till I tell you this what did not make the episode. Why he only has one arm?
Why?
Okay, this guy was a fucking hockey player in Canada, okay? His team is on a bus to an away game, gets into a wreck, boom! Loses the arm to the elbow, pretty much.
Mm-hmm.
Shifts gears. Becomes a lawyer. Is in Vegas a few years ago when a mass shooting happens. Okay? He's there, I guess, just being a lawyer in Vegas, sees a woman bleeding to death on the street from the mayhem and from the shooting. Whips his belt off with his one arm. Ties it around this woman, tourniquet style. Gets her to a hospital. Saves her life. Boom! And that guy's also public defender. This guy's a f***ing public defender.
Yeah, that's a hero.
So this podcast causes a stir. This new DA uses it to get elected. They press charges. Sarah's pumped. She's got new followers. She's ticking and talking. New DA, everybody loves me. Woo! This goes to trial. And how's the trial go?
He's acquitted.
It's not just that he's acquitted. It's that there's this thing that happens at all trials. The defense can say, whoa, you should just drop this whole thing. Like, this kind of shouldn't even be a case.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess it's like it's a formality that they go through that pretty much almost all trials, this happens. Like, it's a shot in the dark.
Mm-hmm.
So they do that here. This fucking judge says, you know what? You're right. It's out of here. You're free. Get out of here, you old sick fuck. Wheel yourself out of here. That's crazy.
The judge probably saw that the prosecution didn't have enough. Also, he had previously been arrested for planning this mass shooting and having all these weapons and bombs, so he did do time for that.
That wasn't allowed to be admitted, and that's what the oldest brother was saying, that couldn't be admitted that he had criminal charges, and he's like, well, why not? He's a criminal, which I think is an excellent point. But this is what I ask you. The jury wasn't going to be able to know that info. But the judge did, right? All that shit that they were mad about not being able to present, that judge is the one that said you cannot present that, correct?
Yes. And I think he saw that without being able to present all that stuff, they didn't have a case.
But I hear you.
Listen, I agree. Mike did that shit. But if they didn't have a case to prove it, if they're not allowed to use any of that evidence, there's no trial.
But that's what you say, but okay, look,
I'm watching a lot of The Good Wife right now.
Of course.
And this happens all the time.
She has an agenda, whether you believe it or not.
But wait, I know that technically, law-wise, that should have happened. I get it. Like, if it had gone to trial, like, it could have affected it or could not have. I think that he still would have been convicted even without that because he's a a sick and they would have gotten it across in their other ways. But here's why I'm mad at the judge, and there was a total loophole for him to do this both morally, ethically, and legally. He knows that if he doesn't let this go to the jury, it's going to be double jeopardy and this guy can never be tried for this crime ever again. Like, he's so confident and believes in the system of law so much that he wouldn't even let this go to trial just to let the prosecutor shoot their shot. No matter how sloppy that shot would be with the jury, at least let them shoot it. Because now they're never allowed to play the game again. I mean, this basketball metaphor, I'm f***ing crushing. Or is it a Hamilton metaphor? I don't know.
They can't go after him again for murder.
No.
Ever. So that's it.
I'm not saying it's wrong or right. I guess I'm impressed at this f***ing judge, and you apparently, to be able to draw this line and look at this guy. I don't know. I wouldn't be able to go like, I want to be on the books for this.
Kurt,
please.
There was no body. There was no murder weapon. There was no crime scene. There's no case.
But how did it get to that point? Like, because J-Mank brings this up with AC about remember when they go to the DA and the DA says that's not enough?
Mm-hmm.
Because J-Mank, from the jump, his first thing about this whole episode is, why did this even go to trial?
And I guess my first question is, how did this get into a courtroom? Where's the evidence?
Well, it went to trial because the new DA came in and wanted to impress everybody and started opening up cases.
They presented that same evidence to the DA that said no to the one that said yes, right? So like...
That's ego.
I mean, that first... Is it? I mean, it... Look, I get it. If he had been found innocent, I would have said, you're right, they didn't have a case. But I still would have been okay paying the tax dollars. When I get around to paying my taxes, say, this is for that one case that happened that one time. I'd have been okay with it because I don't... this guy's free as a bird.
Yeah.
Like, he could have blown up whole town, Kate.
I know. They said he had enough ammo and enough explosives to blow up the entire neighborhood.
Yeah, now, that stat we got from that looky-loo Karen neighbor. Now, this episode had me on a roller coaster for emotions for a lot of reasons. First one that had me stoked was in the cold open, they tease that this lady's snapping pics over the fence. And I even texted you, like, hell yeah, like, look at this, crime in progress.
I took my camera,
my phone,
and just started taking pictures.
We get to that part of the Dateline.
And it's nothing.
She was taking pictures of the police because they had a search warrant.
I kind of got up on this and I just kind of looked over and I saw them digging there. So I just kind of took my camera,
my phone,
and just started taking some pictures.
So you're playing citizen journalist.
Citizen journalist,
taking
yes.
these photos.
Yes.
The f*** would I care about that angle? I want the picture of the police that you're taking pictures of. They have a camera too, lady. Like, get out of here.
Yeah.
Right? That's busybody sh**.
I was hoping she was taking pictures of Mike burying his stepdaughter's body.
Yeah. Look, it was a great misdirect. And with an episode with so many other twists and turns, I don't know why they felt they had to do it. If it wasn't such a banger, like if that had happened in a Thursday shorty, I'd be pissed and still talking about it. But there's enough stuff to talk about here.
Totally.
Where I'm okay with it.
If that was a Thursday shorty, we would have just been going off.
Yeah. Yeah. This part's really cute. On the podcast, J-Mank goes, to quote my favorite Dateline correspondent, holy cow. And then there's the long, long pause that he goes, I loved it when you said that. You said that to AC.
Aw, cute.
To quote my favorite Dateline correspondent, holy cow. I loved it when you said that.
that was a lot.
Look at these two, huh? Just buds. And J-Mank was mad impressed with this fucking Canadian hockey player lawyer because this is what he says. He goes, not a lot of public defenders will talk to us. A lot of times they do not. And they love public defenders. J-Mank and AC, they have real nice things to say. And then also, oh, AC's reaction to the recording the kid at work. Well, she said, that's a no from me. Which is weird to see hear from AC,
that's
right?
It's going to be a no for me, dog.
Exactly.
That's a hard no for me.
Should we have been listening to these this whole time? Are our fans like, duh, guys, that's where the action is?
Nah, I don't think so. I mean, this was a Friday fanny with some good stuff, some really crazy whoa dudes, and J-Mank talking to AC. I mean, it was, but there's other ones where it's, somebody's got to talk to Murph Dog.
Glad it's not us.
I guess it doesn't fit, but I say Get rid of the looky-loo.
I just kind of looked over.
Tell that story about this hero public defender. Because right now, to the Dateline audience who doesn't listen to that episode, do you like that guy at the end of this? I guess not. Unless you're level-headed about it. It's like, look, there was no case.
I am very level-headed. That's what Kateline brings to the pod.
Yeah.
List time? Kate's unnamed list. Mike was in the military.
So was the detective's dad.
Right. He felt like his dad and Mike were so similar and had very similar backgrounds, and he just wanted to help solve this case for Mike initially.
Yeah, that is pretty funny that he went into with, like, Mike had that much goodwill working for him.
Until he stopped cooperating.
Yeah, and then, we didn't talk about how they finally got him to say, okay, fine, bring over your trucks or whatever, I'll give you what I can. So they come over to his house with like a set of U-Haul.
It's a yearbook.
It's a yearbook.
It's one item. The Florida connection. At one point, they investigate another person as a possible suspect because...
This Joker.
There's this guy who... basically was a serial killer. He murdered several women and he was in prison in Florida. And while there, he claimed that he also murdered Alyssa, which turned out to not be true. But
right there in the room, the polygrapher determined Heimer was making it all up.
He was imprisoned in Florida, so it counts for my list.
Absolutely. An extra tidbit from the after show. He was a self-proclaimed serial killer, full stop. I don't think he had any murders. I think he was claiming bodies. I think he was just some jabroni in a jail cell going, I killed her. I'm reading the news. I killed her too.
What a loser.
Yeah.
Excellent use of the word jabroni. Points for that.
Thank you.
And
what else you got?
The last thing on my list, Mike himself cried and said, I'm sorry.
I sure miss her. She gave me a reason to stay alive. Sorry.
The balls. To kill your own stepdaughter, cry, and then apologize like you're just so choked up about it.
I mean, an AC doesn't give him a f***ing inch. I loved it.
And to anyone who says that these tears are not real.
I don't care what people think.
Like, remember when somebody said that to Keith, and Keith was like, I'm sorry. AC heard this from Mike and said, boo, shut up.
Shut up, Mike.
Oh my god, I loved it. All right, well now it's time for Kurt's Kick-Ass List. God, you know, I wish there were signs of a struggle, because that would mean that we found a crime scene, which means that we had a body, which we don't have. So there's certainly no signs of a struggle.
No.
We did talk about movies, though, because that detective, he did what I love. He named those movies by name. On the recordings, he could remember what kind of pizza they liked.
Half pepperoni and half onion.
And what movie they were looking for times for.
Princess Diaries.
And do they talk about Dateline? Yeah, ton. Tons and tons do they talk about it. Perhaps the most. Not so much in the context that I like it. Of course I know that. I've seen Dateline. But this Dateline Missing America and Sarah and all the justice, Dateline was very much mentioned. Join us next week for a Thursday shorty called Open Desert. This Open Desert, I think, is new. Have you watched this one yet?
No. Is this also in Phoenix?
Nevada. But it sure does look like it. It's close, huh?
Phoenix adjacent.
Yeah. Oh, hey. When J-Make was a kid, his dad bet him. He said, if you can make it to 24 without smoking a cigarette, I'll pay you $1,000. And guess what? J-Make made it. Got that grand from his pops. Still has never smoked.
I mean, I've never smoked. Can I have $1,000?
No, you can't. As a matter of fact, give me $1,000 for asking me for $1,000 during this J. Mink anecdote that I thought was pretty cute.
When I was 5 years old, which was right around when Lincoln was assassinated, I think, my dad...
You think that was very cute?
It's fine, but it's not that impressive. I have gone way longer than 24 without ever taking a puff.
Never? You've never once taken a puff of a
cigarette?
No,
never.
Okay. Kate, I am impressed by that. Now, you are not one of my favorite correspondents on Dateline, but guess what? You are my favorite correspondent on I'm Lester Holt.
I appreciate that, Kurt. The feeling is mutual.
Right on. Well, in the spirit of that, I'm Kurt Money.
I'm Kate Line.
I'm Lester Holt. For all of us, I'm Lester Holt. Good night.